Mmm, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Hello and welcome to Talk From Superheroes. Hey everybody, I'm Andrew Rodney.
And I'm Diana McCullum.
And you're listening to Talk From Superheroes, where every week we discuss a piece of heroic television or film. And this week on the podcast, we are talking about everything, everywhere, all at once.
We are going to talk about everything, everywhere. I'm going to say we won't talk about it all at once. I think we'll stretch it out to about an hour.
I'm going to say that it's on our listener to determine how fast or slow they may or may not. Because I know, you know, a lot of the podcast playing apps, you've got like a 1.5 speed button. I don't know if they have an everything at once button.
If you like just layer each second upon each other.
A listener could download this, you know, put it into their Audacity or GarageBand, really trunk it, like increase the playback speed, hit play, and then it's just, and then like, there it is.
Now let me spitball. Should we release a special edition
that is
of the episode?
All at once?
All at once.
Hmm.
Special 1 second version of Talk From Superheroes.
That's not bad. Perhaps we should.
Look out, guys.
Look out for the completely inaudible audio file that we shall release.
The sponsors will love it.
Oh, they're going to be all
They're
going to
be over the moon about it.
They're going to be like, we love that our ad was just a loud yelp while multiversal episodes of the podcast played simultaneously.
Hey, they're part of it.
They're part of it. Hey, that's, we should be charging more, frankly, for multiversal exposure like that.
Yeah, the other Diana also said the ad in the next universe over.
Yes, hopefully this is the consistent that like each one of us has agreed to for whatever version of this movie that that universe has to have done this. And then this is what causes like the nexus event.
Events.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're talking about everything everywhere all at once, you guys.
So we're talking about everything everywhere all at once this week. We are excited to talk to you about it. It is a new movie. It's recently released. And whenever we talk about a new movie or a TV show, we like to give you a spoiler-free review. So if you're on the fence about seeing it, not sure if it's for you, or if you just want a taste of the episode before you listen to the whole thing, we're going to give you a spoiler-free review. Then, once you hear the theme song to the show, after that, that's when we're going to be in the spoiler-filled section. So after the theme song, it will be spoilers ahoy. So warning for that. But in the meantime, for a spoiler-free review, the simple question, Diana, did you like it?
Oh, I did like it. I loved this movie. It was incredible. It's a like a new sci-fi story. It's beautifully told. The effects are super cool. The choreography is wonderful. I literally laughed and cried. I was very moved. There's incredible morals and messages here. Wonderful performances. There is nary a thing to critique in Everything Everywhere All at Once. You got Jamie Lee Curtis really playing out of type in a really fun way. Michelle Yeoh's amazing. There's so much cool story in the background of like the directors and the filmmakers and the actors. I am over the moon about this film. I'll go see it again at any point. I loved Everything Everywhere All at Once. Andrew, did you like it?
I also loved it.
Yeah, I also loved it.
My love is a little wavering sometimes. So since we've seen it, it's like I've been thinking about it and there are moments where I'm like, I don't know if I'm getting the most juice out of it. Like I want to... It definitely is filled with flawless performances, and it invoked a lot of emotion for me, from laughter to tears. It really did it. Visually, it's absolutely stunning. In terms of its themes and its messaging, there are times where I've kind of like wavered since seeing it, where I'm like, I don't know if I'm on board with that or if that quite lands with me. So there are like little wavering moments that's just about like overarching kind of theme and its purpose. But the waveringness really just brings me from a love to a high like. Like even in these little window of moments where I'm slightly critical of the film. And even then, I wouldn't even say that I'm critical, because it's not like... These little moments where I'm kind of losing faith in the movie to a 1% tiny degree. At no point am I like, oh, it's because this failed, this didn't work. It is just a moment of like, was that for me? So it is more of an analytical moment of like, was that theme for me? Is this going over my head? Am I just not in love with this moral or with this purpose? So it is just more about these little moments that are wavering for me personally. But I think that it's still high like to love, and I think it's a flawlessly executed movie.
I would say any movie that like days later you're still thinking about the themes and like how they relate and how they work is pretty good, a pretty good sign of a very good film. I will say, to have a slight critique, I think there are a lot of themes, and I like actually most of them, but as I was writing my notes, I'm like, I've come up with about four themes happening in this movie.
Right.
So maybe there could be one or two less and you could really focus in, but also every theme I wrote down, I'm like, oh, that's a good theme too. All the themes I like.
It's title does not lie.
It's everywhere all at once, you guys.
Yeah. They really try to hammer home kind of every theme, to the point that when the movie goes on and they start kind of exploring different characters, I'm a little bit jarred and surprised to be like, oh, you have somewhere to go? I really thought that this whole story was going to be about one particular relationship.
Oh, we're fleshing you out now.
Yeah, huh. Yeah. So there are some turns that I didn't really expect, and I like that they went there, but it does seem like they're really trying to cram a lot of story into, you know, into the amount of time that they have, into the little over 2 hours that they have.
Mm-hmm. Which, like, I feel ridiculous for when I went in. I was like, oh, no, 2 hours. Why do they need that long? And I'm like, it's right. It's everything, everywhere, all it's gonna be. Of course it's going to be over 2 hours. Not long over 2 hours. Right. Like, it didn't feel long, but I was like, I'm an idiot. I'm just dumb.
If it's everything, what are they going to cut? You know, you can't, there's nothing that's cuttable. It's everything.
If anything, the movie should be longer.
Absolutely. I'm amazed that they managed to get it all into this 2 hours and
it's only
minutes.
At eight times the speed, you guys.
And this movie is such a spectacle as well. It is an absolute a visual delight. It is gorgeous. It is well executed. It is a beautiful enough movie that I would say that like this is worth seeing in the theater just for the imagery alone. And it's just gorgeous.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. It's gorgeous and it's incredible. Like, you can see that there's a budget, but like it's flawless at the same time. Like, it's cheap's not the word I want to use, but like it's
efficient.
It uses its money in really smart, clever ways with a lot of love and a lot of care. So you're like, no, this is good. This is art. We're watching art. This movie's art.
And even from its scope alone, the fact that they were able to execute the sheer amount of shots, costumes, wardrobe, sets, locations, this is a technical nightmare to have worked on. Like, I can only imagine literally every aspect of filmmaking, like to the production coordinators, to the sets, to the costumes, to all of the insert shots, the millions of different takes, shots, and lighting that they needed to accomplish. This should have been an absolute nightmare to work on, but it is clear that every aspect was worked with nothing but love and attention, and it really shines through.
It's so definitely go see this in theaters if you can, if you feel comfortable. If not, when it is released on home, absolutely check it out.
Yeah.
And can it be spoiled?
I think it can.
I think it can. Like, I think it would take some explaining. I don't think I could get to the spoiler quickly. I don't think I'm gonna like name drop a spoiler and you're gonna be like, this movie's ruined.
Right. It's not gonna be like, and Jamie Lee Curtis was the killer the whole time. Like, there's no one twist.
No, but if you were to explain the whole plot to someone, you could ruin it a little bit.
Yeah, you could, but it is also largely like esoteric and conceptual, and there's a lot of weird and strange things going on. I think that there are some really good jokes that can be spoiled. Ooh. And also, I knew relatively little going in other than like a short trailer that I had seen and a general premise. So I think there is just a lot about like the tone and power of it that kind of like caught me off guard, and I thought was I really enjoyed going in relatively fresh to this as well. So I would say it can be spoiled.
All right, we'll say it can be spoiled if you really try, or if someone you're talking to is really trying.
Yes, I mean, I think if you give us an hour, we can really do it.
We're gonna take that hour, you guys.
We're gonna do our best to spoil it for you after the theme music, you know. But for now, I would say that it can be spoiled, depending on how deep you dive into it. But before we get into the spoiler-filled section, to the full deep dive into Everything Everywhere All at Once, we want to thank our wonderful sponsor of today's episode. We want to thank our friends over at Manscaped.
Manscaped. They are the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Andrew is a consumer of Manscaped products.
I'm a consumer. I'm a user. They have over 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped, so they've got the customers to back it up, including myself. They have their new Performance Package 4.0. Inside of that, you will find their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, the Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, the Crop Preserver ball deodorant, the Crop Reviver toner, Performance Boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold all your goodies. We were traveling recently. I'm using the travel bag. I'm using all of their products. Earlier today, shortly before we recorded, I did the ear and nose hair trimmer to tidy it up because the human body is a mess. Why do we need more nose and ear hair as we get older? I don't understand. I think biologically and evolutionarily, the human body did it wrong. We shouldn't be like that. Why am I like that?
Why does it keep going? Like, my eyelashes yes. aren't getting any longer.
Thank you.
Why does my ear and nose be like, we're coming out? Mm-hmm. but you got to clean it up.
Yeah, the no hair on my head doesn't grow any faster.
Especially because when the nose hairs come out, there's snot on them now. Like, that's this, a gross place.
It's not right. I don't understand. The human body makes mistakes. And I'm really liking that Manscaped is helping me resolve the issues that the human body has provided. So I trim my ear and nose hair with their weed whacker. Their lawnmower is the future of grooming. It's a great like ball and private trimmer. It is waterproof. I've used it in the shower, which is great. It's got a little light on it, which is great for just like, you know, getting where you need to and still seeing what you're doing, which is key because you don't want to cause any damage or make a mistake, and it's gonna help you keep things as safe as possible down there.
I mean, it's also very safe because they use advanced skin safe technology in their trimmers.
There we go. You have it. They have their ball preserver and deodorant, which will change the way you approach your hygiene routine. They've got a lot of great stuff. Their boxers are also fantastic and comfortable. Their travel bag, the accessories, the accoutrement that they provide.
Guys, I'm really jealous because Andrew genuinely uses his Manscaped products all the time. And I'm like, I don't have equivalents to a lot of these. Mm. And you love them. Like, you're
fantastic.
You wear your Manscaped boxers so much.
They're very comfortable
and
boxers.
I touch them and they're soft.
They're very soft and lovely. They're fantastic. So right now you can get 20% off and free shipping with the code TFS20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use promo code TFS20. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. And thank you, Manscaped, for your support.
Thank you so much, Manscaped.
And now let's get into the episode. Let's talk about Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Let's try.
So we've seen it all.
We've seen everything. We are Patrick Stewart from that Extras episode.
Where he has seen everything.
Mm-hmm. That's us.
Because we have seen everything. And I'm really glad that we both liked it. This is fantastic.
I'm really glad we both loved it. I'm really glad we went to it because we did not have this on the schedule originally. And then it was getting like so much like hype, even though it's an indie movie. And we're like, well, fuck, let's pop it in there. Let's go see what this is all about. And I'm thrilled.
I'm absolutely thrilled. I'm also a little surprised that this is such a high love for you as well, because
really?
It feels like this is not one that would normally be one of your favorites. This feels like the type of one where I'd be like, I like it. And you'd be like, it's a little much.
Oh, I mean, I will say the first 20 minutes were a little much.
Okay.
But looking back, I know why they're too much. Like, they really had to set this, like, her life is frenetic. She doesn't take time for anything. She's always moving. She will not stop. She's never listening. So looking back, I'm like, I know why the beginning of the movie felt like that before kind of the alternate universes started. Mm-hmm. It was it was jarring and hard because like there's like Chinese and English and the subtitles are breaking because they're switching mid-sentences and I didn't know what was going to be important. So I was like, because I didn't know what kind of movie it would be. So I'm like trying to track the noodles because I'm like, okay, there's three bowls of noodles. Is it going to be important? Like, I don't know what the weird part of the movie is going to be. Like, okay, is it going to be like a Lynchian, like Mulholland Drive? Like, oh, where'd the lamp go? Oh my God. Like hints, but it was no hints. It was all very... very big in your face. So I think on second viewing, I actually think I might find the frenetic part quite relaxing because you can be like, this isn't actually very plot relevant. This is a slice of her life, of how busy she is, how unhappy she is, how mean she is to her daughter and husband. Mm-hmm. I don't know if mean's the word, neglectful.
Yeah. I think neglectful might be the right one. Oblivious, certainly, as to what their perspective or opinion is of her. Mm-hmm. Completely oblivious to the fact that, like, you know, her daughter is incredibly unhappy with their relationship. Her husband is looking to leave. So definitely callous and oblivious.
Yeah. So the first 20 minutes is actually really nice looking back because it explains kind of why she's willing to switch her shoes and try to leave to another universe and maybe actually get out of here.
Now, I would disagree with that, actually. Oh, really? I really like this first section. It does shift gears at a breakneck speed all of a sudden when the dimension hopping does start coming in, because this first 20, 30 minutes, this first act of the movie, it is such just a brutal character study of this family, like an unapologetic, uncomfortable, there's not even like a hint of the larger sci-fi premise to come. It really is.
Not for forever.
And it's phenomenally performed. Like everyone absolutely owns their character perfectly. Some phenomenal, phenomenal performances that are happening. But it is just an unapologetic, very uncomfortable character study about this family that is chaos embodied and completely falling apart at the seams. But I never feel like she wants to escape. Like, I feel like when the time comes that she does, air quote, start, like, escape, she accepts the call to adventure. It's more out of a curiosity. Like, she almost accepts the call to adventure to tell adventure that she's busy today. That's literally what she does. Like, she at no point wants to escape what's going on in her life. So I find it a little muddied when that tonal shift comes. And I like both sections of the movie, but I don't know if one motivates to the other.
Oh, I actually thought it was very clear that she wanted to escape. The only time she takes a moment for herself is when she watches the movie on the TV and she kind of pictures herself in there, the two people that are singing.
Yeah.
It's kind of more... I will admit that the movie is kind of more show than tell for that aspect, because when Jamie Lee Curtis is going over their taxes and she's like, I thought I could be an actress, and I thought I could teach singing, and I thought I could have karaoke, and I thought I could do kung fu. That doesn't come up, but I assume it does, because one of her alternate universes, she does kung fu. Mm-hmm. So all these piles of like hobbies that she thinks are jobs. So she's definitely tried to expand her life outside of what she has. It's like she's definitely, like, as soon as she sees that she's a movie star in one universe, she's like, I could have that. So I felt like even though she wasn't actively trying to leave, I think the second her husband told her, you're important in another universe, she was like, great, get me out of here. And, you know, it's like too crazy to immediately, great, get me out of there. But as soon as she saw she was a movie star, she was like, can I stay there?
Gotcha.
So you kind of, it's not really, as soon as it happened, you get it. But like, I totally believe this woman did this.
Okay, I can see that, yeah.
Having seen everything everywhere all at once.
Having seen everything I would say to kind of catch anyone up who maybe is listening to the spoiler-filled section but hasn't seen the entire movie, this family, they run a
laundromat.
I was going to say dry cleaning business, but it's a laundromat that is failing, doing poorly. You know, the patriarchal grandfather is visiting, and everything is going to shit and is chaos. And Michelle Yeoh, who plays Evelyn, the mother of this family, is called by characters from another dimension, and her daughter is this evil villain, this Jobu Tabaki, who has seen everything everywhere all at once and wants to destroy the multiverse because she is a teenage daughter who is filled with nihilism and rebellion. Mm-hmm. And now it is her journey to stop her daughter in some regard.
And to save her daughter in some regard.
To save her daughter.
So anyway,
as well.
She's
and to
she's,
save the to save the multiverse.
To save the multiverse. So she's dimension hopping. Every time she jumps to a dimension, she can get the abilities of the person in that dimension. So she's finding other versions of her who are experts in things. So there's a kung fu expert, there's a chef, there's a ballerina, there's a singer. The singer hilariously gives her like greater lung capacity to go through some smoke. Like little, very little skills that you're like, the singer won't have anything useful, and you're like, oh, my lung capacity.
Right. And then and then Lynchian nightmares, like a universe where you just have hot dog fingers.
Yep. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's definitely one. And then just a comedic raccoon-y
raccoon tui, or as they call it, which I absolutely love.
That section was incredible.
I want to see raccoon tui. Like, I flat out just want to see raccoon tui as
the whole movie.
The entire movie.
How many spinoffs from this movie can we get to? Because I want to see raccoon-y. I want to see a whole movie about Jamie Lee Curtis and Michelle Yeoh and their hot dog fingers. Like,
I do not want to see that. No, get
I'll
that
watch,
out of here.
I'll watch that.
The hot dog finger universe was upsetting
you
to me.
You know what? I don't want it to be a long movie, but okay. I will take a bit film. More of a movie.
A short film, yeah.
Raccoon-y was very fun for me because the guy who plays the chef, Harry Shum Jr., is from Shadowhunters.
Oh, yeah. And he really commits to that role, too, and is so good at it. When he loses
raccoon-y.
His raccoon, oh my God. All based on Michelle Yeoh's character, Evelyn, misremembering the plot to Ratatouille at one point as everyone laughs at her because she remembers it being a raccoon in a hat teaching him how to cook, and there's a universe where that's real. It tickled me to no end. I fucking love that universe and that joke.
It was so funny because, guys, I don't know if you know this, a raccoon's way bigger than a rat.
Yeah.
So much funnier. Wildly funny.
I do want to know if I missed it the first time, because the first time she's trying to remember, I think, like how to use a knife or something. She finds a universe where she works at like a Benihana's, like cutting and grilling stuff. And he's another employee there, and they show him and he winks at her. And I thought it was just a random guy winking at her. I wonder if you can notice the raccoon under the hat right away. Because right away, he's just a dude who works at her place, her place of work. I wonder if you can notice the raccoon right away.
I wonder. I don't know. It would definitely be subtle, because they wouldn't want you to see that right away. That's like a nice surprise when you walk into the back room and he's talking to the raccoon.
It's not bad. It's not bad at all. But I love the silliness of the multiversal stuff.
The silliness juxtaposed with the incredible seriousness, like the wonderful story being told. Because, yeah, hot dog fingers and raccoon-y is very silly. But I was bawling my eyes out at the end of, like, the movie star section when she's talking to the Wayman, her husband that she never married.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a beautifully well-contrasted movie of the comedy highlights the tragedy and the sadness, but also, like, not even sadness, maybe just, like, beauty and love that evokes emotion from you.
Yeah, it does a very good job of landing home the emotion of this kind of wanderlust, grass is greener idea of what would have happened if. And, like, even as Evelyn finds these universes where, you know, if we're calling the main one that we see start the movie, if we're to call her, like, the main Evelyn.
Evelyn Prime.
Evelyn Prime, even though there's another universe that calls themselves the Prime, and that has Evelyn. Yeah, because when Wayland shows up, he's like, we're from the first one who found multiversal hopping. We're Prime.
I thought they were Alpha.
Was it Alpha?
Alpha.
Okay, maybe they were Alpha.
Because I would have clocked Prime, because, like, DC Comics always uses Prime.
Got it. Well, let's call this Evelyn Prime, one that we start the movie with. This Evelyn Prime sees, like, the movie star version of her and very much, like, wants that, wants to go there. But in seeing and experiencing that, we see this movie star version of her who has this romantic idea of not being the movie star and actually going to open a laundromat with Wayman when they were young. So it's just this nice, like, there is an optimistic nihilism to this film to be like, you're never really happy and that's okay. And it's a strange feeling to let wash over you, but they successfully execute it.
Yeah, they definitely do. Because, like, even Wayman, it's not even just her. Even Wayman seems to be very successful. He's in a suit. He's at a giant movie premiere. And even he is like, I wrote the line down because it made me cry. I think I could have been happy with a life doing laundry and taxes with you. So both of these characters would have are very successful, but they're also alone and they don't have a daughter. And they're like, what if we'd gone to America and had a family? Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, it's a very grass is always greener in a kind of like, even if you get what you wanted, life wouldn't necessarily be better. You'll never be fully happy. So just be happy.
Yeah, yeah. And okay, so that kind of brings me to one of the themes of this movie that I find like a little bit, that I find myself wavering on sometimes, mm-hmm. which is that nihilistic, you'll never be happy, so just be happy, idiot. And that it is a contradiction. I think the movie is aware of that and kind of leans into it. It is a very difficult thing to execute and have a lesson about, which is just the idea that everything is possible. Everything is happening everywhere all at once. And if that is true, it means that everything is meaningless. It means that everything is meaningless because every choice you make does not matter because you've made every choice. It's all identical. None of this means anything. And if that is true, that also means that everything means everything. Mm-hmm. If anything means nothing, then everything means everything is, I think, one of the points of the movie. But it's a very complicated, optimistic nihilism that in itself is a bit of a conundrum to kind of teach.
Okay. I think that's a little bit different than what you said a minute ago, which is like, you'll never be happy, so just be happy. Because that one I thought they had a pretty good message on of, you'll never be happy, so cherish the moments of happiness. Mm. Really, like, give them your attention, give them your love. Those will be... No, not everyone will be happy at all times. So when you do have those moments of happiness, you have to cherish them and nurture them and make them grow.
Okay.
And that I thought was pretty clear. She had a couple scenes with her daughter, with Joju version of her daughter, where she made that clear. But the other version of like, yeah, the idea that nothing matters, I didn't particularly love, I will admit. Yeah, I'm like, I never like hearing nothing matters. Even when that turns out not to be the end moral, I just never like to hear it.
Or to even like to tweak that moral. Yeah. To be like, nothing matters, and that's kind of freeing, isn't it? And to be like, you can have a chaotic moment, get audited, and smash the window of your laundromat. But hey, you know, like, apologize to your daughter. There's a little moment where you share a moment with the IRS woman who's auditing you. Like, that's kind of nice, isn't it?
You're going to have a vape with Jamie Lee Curtis, and that's going to be a good time.
That does sound pretty chill.
I'd love to have a vape.
I'd die to have a vape with Jamie Lee Curtis.
I don't even vape, and I would be like, yes, please.
Everything is chaotic and meaningless, so just enjoy this moment is an interesting one, you know? I do think the movie might also be... I'm going to say definitely is trying to tell a generational story also.
Yes, it absolutely is.
And that generational story kind of interweaves and overlays with the nihilism of it all as well, which is how each generation responds to the chaos of that is life and recognizing that life is chaos, mm-hmm. where it is the father, grandfather figure played by James Hong, the character of Gong Gong, the grandfather patriarchal figure deals with the chaos of the world and his multidimensional version as well as his on the main Earth version. He deals with it all by control. Mm-hmm. Can I emplace a system of control that will add order to the chaos? Can I make the chaos make sense? Whereas the mother, Michelle Yeoh's character, is very much a like, can I just survive the chaos? And then the daughter of a younger generation is now dealing with like, the chaos proves that none of this means anything and I hate it all. And it is this anger and rebellion against the entire system and in the entire idea of what adult life in reality is. So I think it is three generations' response to existential dread to be like, how did a grandfather respond to first recognizing existential dread? Mm. And that generation was control. Then it was work. Then it was rebellion. And these are very like, yeah, Gen X, Boomer, and like different generational takes on existential dread, I think.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I hadn't thought about it, and so I hadn't looked at it that way, but it all tracks from what I'm thinking about right now as you say those words. Yeah, the grandfather is controlling. He's like, kill the daughter, I'm running this business, blah, 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 blah. The mother is just surviving. She's just working. And the daughter is rebelling slash destroying the things that came before her, because she won't accept this world because it won't accept her, because she's, you know, she's gay, and so like the older generations are like, you can't be. And she's like, I'm going to burn it all to the ground. I will not change.
Yeah.
And that's cool. It's a cool story. It almost makes it feel like it actually should be more of a story from the daughter's point of view and not from Evelyn when you say it that way. Because it's weird that it's from the mid-generation's perspective.
That is a little strange, right?
Yeah. But also, like, you know, mid-generation's still around. Make a movie for the Michelle Yeohs in the world.
For sure. For sure.
They're still doing stuff.
Absolutely.
They can learn from us.
Yeah. It does feel, honestly, like, it feels very real in the sense that, like, when I look at it, I'm like, that is how my grandparents' parents and me have dealt with existential dread. Like, I think about my grandparents, and it was very much a, like, you survive by following the rules. Follow the rules. Control. Follow the rules. You do this. You're like, this is this. You do the exact thing society tells you, and you never leave that box. And then my parents' generation, it was very much like, follow the rules, break the rules, just survive. You just got to survive. Life is chaos, just survive.
Go to work, pay your bills.
Just don't fucking think about it, just survive. And then my generation is very much a, like, if the rules don't work, fucking burn the whole system down. This whole thing's busted. I hate it. I hate it, and it's busted.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind if we busted a few more things, honestly.
Yeah.
We could get more busted.
And I feel like this movie being from Evelyn's mid-generational perspective to see this rift kind of between what her father is pulling at, which is control, and what her daughter is pulling at, which is the acceptance of chaos, that I don't know if Evelyn learns her lesson of, like, what her misunderstandings are quite by the end. Like, the movie ends, and, like, it has that moment by the car where she's, like, a little apologetic, but she's still just like, you need to change your diet, you're getting fat. It's still very, like, judgmental and in the moment. And I think the beauty is supposed to be that, like, even ugly moments are beautiful, but did you learn that, Evelyn?
Yeah. I mean, as I say it, I think actually maybe it is good that Evelyn is the lead, even though, like I said, like, it should be the daughter a second ago, because you always want your lead character to be the one who changes. And I'm not sure if the daughter has much to change.
Ooh, that's a good point.
She wouldn't really have anywhere to go. Like, she's not even wrong about her nihilistic views when her mind is completely fractured. But definitely, like, prime daughter does not need to change. She's super cool. I love her. But Evelyn does need to change, which is why she's the main character. So I've changed my mind on that.
Oh.
I've gone back immediately. Okay. Evelyn should be the main character. I will say, yeah, I'm not sure. I feel like her only big change was that she's decided to slow down and enjoy moments. I don't know what, I mean, there was a callback earlier of, like, when she says you're fat, it means she cares. But, like, I'm like, well, people say that all the time when people say they're just like, you should lose weight in a loving way. I'm like, no, it's still gross.
You're still
thing
being
to say.
Shitty. Yeah.
You're still being shitty.
I'm shitty because I care. Well, care different.
It's wild to go through every single universe and not become your best possible self instead of just slightly better. But she is more caring and more loving. She's a better person. She's not completely better, but she's definitely a better person at the end.
Yeah. I can see that. I can get on board with that. I'm definitely on board with, I like you kind of pointing out that's why she is the lead character, and that kind of helps sell me on it a little bit as well, to be like, you need that push and pull in either direction. You're right. She's the one who needs to change. Maybe she needed to change more, but she needed to change, and she changed some.
She did change some.
Well, let's take a quick break in the podcast. We want to thank our other wonderful sponsor of today's episode. We want to thank our friends over at Ghostbed.
Oh, thank you, Ghostbed, because I love sleeping, and I love sleeping with your products. They make mattresses and pillows, you guys.
Sleep.
I put on my little old-timey nightcap.
Z.
I blow out my candle, and I sleep great on my Ghostbed pillow and my Ghost. I don't have a Ghostbed mattress, but I wish I did.
Mm-hmm. We got to get one, because Ghostbed is made by Nature's Sleep, an industry leader in the mattress space since 2001. Every Ghostbed product, from their mattresses to their sheets and pillows, is designed with cooling features, so it's perfect if you sleep warm, which I certainly do. So as we were just mentioning, we have the Ghostbed pillows, and I love the pillow because I run hot. It is breathable. It is cooling. I do not have to change my pillowcases as often as I did previously due to sweating through things because I run hot.
You don't have to flip it. It's, like, always cool.
Yeah.
Both sides are always cool. Yeah, I'm in my head. I'm in my sleep mask. I'm running hot in my head, especially, because the sleep mask is heavy. And I'm always just like, oh, man, since I got this pillow, I am breezy. No sweat.
Cool on the top. Cool on the bottom. And they got their cooling technology in every mattress as well. So you sleep longer at night. They're backed by a 20 to 25 year warranty, which is 2 times the industry standard. They have a 101 night at home sleep trial, so you can try it out for 101 nights. And if you don't like it, you can return it and get your money back. And that's not bad at all. That's 101 night sleeps plus naps. Naps are little bonuses.
Don't forget about your naps, guys. And there's free shipping and most orders ship within 24 hours. Everything to love about Ghostbed.
I got no complaints. So to find your perfect mattress, check out ghostbed.com/TFS. And right now, Ghostbed is offering our listeners 40% off Ghostbed bundles, where you get a mattress and adjustable base. Or you can get 30% off site-wide. That is 30% off all mattresses plus 2 luxury pillows. Use promo code TFS at ghostbed.com/TFS. Hurry to take advantage of these savings. That's ghostbed.com/TFS and use promo code TFS. And thank you, Ghostbed, for your support.
Thank you, Ghostbed.
And now back to Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
Now, we did just talk about how Evelyn only changed a little in regards to her daughter. I actually would say I think my favorite change for Evelyn and my favorite section of the movie is when she changed for her husband. The whole section where she thinks about him and really sees him for maybe the first time in like 30 years and realizes that he fights with kindness is my biggest takeaway from this movie, actually. Not even so much the things with her daughter, which is weird because that's the finale. I actually think the stuff with the husband was a much more emotional hit for me. When she realized that he fights with kindness and like he brings love and optimism and naivety into the world on purpose. And he's just this kind man. And then she fights through all these people with kindness by showing them love, by giving them what they desire, and then even cutting to the real world where she just finally hugs her husband and he breaks down at the slightest show of affection, showing what a monster she's been, obviously. But I've actually been thinking about it for days. Fighting with kindness is a term I really like. I like the idea of it. I like the strength it takes to do that. So I would say her biggest change actually came through Waymond and not through her daughter.
I couldn't agree more with this. The relationship story between the two of them is beautiful and flawlessly executed. Flawlessly. Yeah, the wavering of plot and themes that I have is just about mother-daughter. Mm. The wife-husband relationship, they kill it.
Really clean.
Really
what they're trying to say about these two. The relationship's so clear. What they both have problems with and what they want and what they're working on is so clear.
To the point where like I feel like it could be the movie, even though I do love the daughter character and I really love Stephanie Hsu's performance as Joy slash Jobu Tabaki. Who is the evil entity that is all Joy simultaneously. So I love that performance, but it almost feels like the beginning of the movie, the first few scenes and the last few scenes are almost kind of these tacked on mother-daughter storyline. So that was what felt weird. That first 30 minutes, we get a kind of taste that like the husband's unhappy and has divorce papers and is leaving. But really those first 30 minutes are all about mother-daughter. Mm. It is entirely about Evelyn and her daughter Joy. And her daughter Joy, like being unsatisfied, is supposed to come help her at the IRS office and doesn't, has a girlfriend who the mother won't introduce to the grandfather. It is all mother-daughter. And then once the multiverse stuff comes in, it really becomes about Evelyn and Waymond. It becomes about their relationship. And then even in the end, that final fight scene, she learns to fight with Joy. It is an exact perfect arc of our hero learning the lesson, which is I'm not going to fight physically anymore. I'm going to hug and touch all of these people and show them the little joyous moments in the lives that they've been unhappy with. So he teaches her the literal lesson that is the arc of her character. If we look at this movie, removing the first 20 minutes and last 20 minutes, it's a perfect character arc.
It is. I actually will say I disagree. I found the first 20 minutes not enough about Joy. But I will say I found the first 20 minutes not enough about Joy because the movie halfway through becomes about Joy.
Mm.
So for like half the movie, it's a movie about her and her husband because Joy doesn't come in for quite a bit. They have several fight scenes with just like security guards and with Jamie Lee Curtis. So Jobu isn't introduced for like an hour.
Right.
So for most of this movie, I'm like, this is a movie about a husband and wife and they have a daughter. I thought this was a movie about a husband and a wife, and Joy didn't have enough in the beginning, actually.
Interesting.
Because when they're like at the end, when she's like growing and reconciling with Joy, I actually found myself kind of thinking like, I'm not sure what your problems were with each other. Like you had them. Like you had them. I'm not saying you didn't have problems, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. I'm like, I'm not sure if you actually do have a problem with her dating a woman or you just know your father would. Like that wasn't made completely clear to me. Okay, maybe with like one line later it was that she did have a problem with it. But so that wasn't made clear to me. Like, and I just didn't know like what the actual issue was. Like, was it just the girlfriend or like even if she was straight, like would you have problems like just because you're not listening and you're never available?
Right. Was it the generational difference of just like being a distant parent who is struggling to pay the bills to keep your daughter alive and now a much more emotionally stable and aware generation that you have no idea how to connect with in any regard, which is a very common parental thing that is happening across the world over the past couple decades.
Oh, yeah. Like, so there were problems, but I couldn't quite put my finger on, like, what's the problem with these two exactly? Right. What are we going to fix in the finale? And even when we got to the finale, I was like, they've definitely cleared some things up, but I'm not sure what we exactly fixed, the way that I am with the husband. I'm like, the husband is perfectly done.
Yeah. We know the problem. They fixed it. It is clean. It is clear. It is beautiful. And it is right across the board.
It is a moral that will affect everyone watching the, like, yeah, I'm like, I want to post it all over the house. I want to get posters that say fight with kindness. It's touching me. It's killing me inside.
It's really beautiful. It's a beautiful theme. I love the story between the two of them. And also, Ki-Hui Kwan, who plays the husband, who plays Waymond, absolutely obliterate. Everyone crushes their role.
Everyone is good.
But holy shit, he is a delight.
He is incredible. And the story of him being in this movie is absolutely amazing. Like,
I don't know this.
So Ki-Hui Kwan, very famously in Goonies and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. So child actor who you know from those two huge franchises. He did like two or three more things after that, but he found it was very hard to get work. I mean, most child actors find it hard to get work when they stop being cute. And it's especially hard when you're an Asian actor
right. In
Hollywood. So he actually left acting for like 22 years. He just couldn't find roles. He didn't feel like trying anymore. He was like, screw this. This industry isn't made for Asian actors right now. And he came back for this film and he hasn't acted in like 20 years.
Wow.
And he's this good. He is incredible. The comedy, the emotion, the turn into the badass when he turns into the other Waymond. It is phenomenal, everything he is doing in this film. He went by Jonathan back in when he was a child actor because he had an Americanized name. So now he's going back to Ki-Hui Kwan, which I'm like so happy for him for. It's lovely. It's the whole story. And now the movie is like wonderful acceptance. It's blowing up. It's slowly getting like a little bit of motion behind it. It's a lovely tale.
An incredible, incredible
performance. Hasn't acted for 20 years.
The warmth with sadness, the absolute like resignation he has as he's attempting to issue these divorce papers because he knows that this is what he needs to do, but it is in no way what he wants to do. But keeping like a smile and a laugh and like little goofs and caring about his daughter through that really brings a complex but playful performance to the role.
I honestly even believed when she said something like, there's a short scene where she says, did you get this idea from your brother? Because he got a divorce. And he said, I thought if I showed you the papers, you might talk to me and we could fix things. And I'm like, that actually seems like the only way to get her attention.
Yeah.
Like he says, you only talk to me when it's an emergency. So this was the only way I thought. Like, so I don't even think he does want out. Like he wants to fix this.
Yeah.
And his portrayal of that is so pure and good. And like the little things he does, like just dancing with customers while they're trying to fix the change machine. And like he really does embody the lesson of fight with kindness. He is everything he approaches. She thinks he's naive, but he's just like, I'm a nice man.
Mm-hmm.
I just want the world to be that way. And it's so nice. And he's so good.
So good.
When he does the fanny pack fight scene also, like, were you also not doing martial arts for 20 years? Because that's you. This movie does not have a hide your face replace button budget.
There was literally two shots where he's doing like a breakdance move where I can see like the wig kind of glued down to a stunt performer's face so that you can't see him. But other than that, it seemed like he was doing quite a bit and having a fun time with it and really, yeah, making a joy and making a delight and showing a lot of range in live switching these personalities, because he has a very different job than the rest of the cast in the sense that he is more of a like dimension hopping. He is changing personalities. He is the Wayland that is, has divorce papers for his wife at first. And then another dimension's him has taken over his body and he has no awareness of this. So it's a totally different persona and personality, and then also that version of him is downloading abilities and attributes from other dimensions, whereas the main Evelyn that we see, played by Michelle Yeoh, doing a phenomenal job as well, is this character, really does a good job of embodying this woman to the point that, like, it was hard for me to dissociate Michelle from the character of Evelyn. Like, 20 minutes into the movie, I'm like, Michelle, listen to your fucking daughter. Like, I was mad at Michelle. So she really embodies it. But she becomes a character who senses and learns from her other dimensional selves, but never does this, like, quick change body hop.
No, because she's the prime. That he has to do. So she doesn't get a switch in personality because she's just getting the attributes. But he is a prime in a different universe who's jumping into our universe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so he has to do these kind of, like,
live switches.
Orphan Black, like, fucking multiple personalities where she's one woman getting different skills.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's incredible.
Very different performance. He absolutely crushes it. But everyone does in this. I would say that Jamie Lee Curtis is fantastic. Very different from everyone else's performance, because everyone else's performance is just grounded in depression and sadness, and Jamie Lee Curtis is doing just straight comedy, which this movie needed for that role. Like, it is, she plays it straight, but it is just laughs from her character, and I adore it.
It's a fine line. She does great. It is wild to see her in this real, like, against type role of, like, I've put on, like, not quite a fat suit, but I'm not trying to be attractive for maybe the first time I've ever seen her in a film.
Apparently, which it was like bold. A water suit that she was wearing. Yeah, she definitely for that had one like a transition stomach. Scene, where, and I think they like had a water suit where when she transitions from like one universe as her to the other, they like sucked the water out, so it changes her posture and whole shape. Uh-huh. Which is kind of like a cool design and aesthetic, and she embodies it well.
Yeah, it's a thing I think most movie stars who are like gorgeous wouldn't be willing to play unless they're going for an Oscar.
Yeah.
Unless you're Oscar baiting like Charlize Theron monster, like, yeah. I put some ugly skin on. but honestly, though, this movie's so good, I wouldn't be surprised if there's Oscar nominations floating around it.
Yeah.
But
Jamie
Lee Curtis. But you don't go into this movie assuming that.
Jamie Lee Curtis is playing a character who looks like she has dandruff. Yeah. And if it's not for an Oscar, I can't recall the last time an attractive actor did that. To be like, make me look like I have dandruff.
She looks like she eats chips.
She looks like she eats chips and has a dry scalp.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely believed it.
Yeah, and hers, like, as the wrestler, like, picking up and, like, attempting to do a backbreaker on Wayland. And a lot of really fun stuff from the multidimensional stuff. I really also love how kooky it is that they have to do something completely random and unpredictable in order to get the dimension hop. So that's how they do it in this movie, where it's like, to access a different world's you have to do something completely wild and unpredictable. So it starts with, I think the first time we see it is Evelyn just putting the shoes on the wrong feet, a very simple one. And then it is Wayland eating a chapstick, which is just like, oh, and it gets weirder. The further you're trying to dimension hop, the weirder the random thing has to be.
She sucks a fly up her nose. You have to have 5 paper cuts on your hand. Ugh. Some of them were, like, not silly enough, I will say, but I really liked the idea. I agree. The idea that you have to, because I feel like the idea was you have to do something you would never naturally do in order to get to the other dimensions. At one point, he just, like, eats some gum he finds under a table. I'm like, people do that. It's gross.
I don't know if people do that.
I mean, in the end of the day, it's just gum. I don't know if it counts that it was someone else's gum first.
Yeah,
the
chapstick, it was under a table, though. You're putting chapstick above eating gum under a table.
Yes. I think it's way weirder to eat chapstick than to eat gum, which is a food that you put in your mouth.
I'm full opposite on this. Someone else's gum from under a table. Folks, get at us online. What is weirder?
What is weirder?
Eating lip balm or eating gum, someone else's gum from under a table.
What one are you more likely to do?
Flat out eat a chapstick.
Not like as a dare, like as a natural everyday thing.
And 0% either as a natural everyday thing. A 0% either. There's no... So either would be a divergent for my day-to-day life. But there are flavored lip balms. You're getting a little in your mouth anyway.
You might as well eat the whole stick.
I'm saying that when I put on lip balm, I am eating 0.08% lip balm.
And it's not hurting
you. So I'm
you.
Already getting there. Mm-hmm. At no point am I eating any percent, even accidentally, of under a table someone else's gum.
But that's not going to hurt you either. They're both non-toxic. But it also did make me think that all of his abilities came from eating weird things, because the first two were chapstick and gum. So I was like, does he only have to eat things?
That did set a weird precedent, actually. I agree it shouldn't have been two oral things to start off, because I was like, I thought it was that, like...
He needed, like an oral fixation.
Or like an airplane thing, your ears pop and you want to be chewing
because
something.
Because he had those, like, wireless buds in.
Yeah, so I thought it was like an airplane thing. So I think doing two oral fixation... things as the random events was not the wise choice off the top.
I also wasn't sure how I felt about the butt plug statues.
I liked one of them.
Okay. What was the second one?
The fact that two dudes put something in their butt. I it only works as one beat.
It can't be weird if you're both doing it. And also, it's not all that weird. People put butt-shaped things up their butts. It was so butt plug shape that to me made it not weird.
Right. That, like, we saw it at the beginning of the movie. It's like, it's funny that it's butt plug shaped. They did introduce it at a time that we didn't know that this was how.
Yes. They introduced it.
It was a
perfectly.
Good seating at a time when it wasn't suspicious. It just felt like a dumb gag to be like, oh, her award looks like a butt plug. And then later when you find out you have to do random things, and then one of the guys is trying to upload like karate skills from a different universe and sees it. And the guy, full, like, they're fighting over who gets to put it in their butt. And one dude comes out of nowhere, buck nude, or, like, wearing a shirt, but bottomless, and jumps full speed onto it. That is funny. And then a few minutes later, when they have a second guy shove something in his butt, it was like, oh, but we just did that.
We just did that. I don't believe you're going to win a fight with that up your butt. Also, you've just injured yourself grievously. No preparation onto the butt plug. But my point is, though, their butt plug shape, people actually do that. I think it should be a weirder thing. You should have to put, like, a pudding up your butt. Mm. Or, like, something not butt plug shape. Not something, like, huge and, like, really weird. Right. But just, like, something that wouldn't go, an eraser.
If it,
like,
was a normal size looking award.
Yes!
If it was an award that just looked like a stapler, it was like the Golden Stapler Award.
The Seinfeld episode where they fall on a trophy.
For Silly Jerry.
For Silly Jerry, yes. Yeah. Something that wouldn't go up there.
Yeah.
That's what I would like.
I agree with that. I would have liked one beat or three beats, because that's not how comedy works.
Yeah, yeah. Two is never it.
No, comedy doesn't come in twos. It comes in threes. Mm-hmm. Comes in threes or a one-off. So when a second guy put a thing in his butt, I was like, okay, what's the third going to be? And the third never happened. It never escalated to that. So I'm like, that's not how you do comedy.
One guy or three.
You got to decide.
I agree. Those are the rules.
Mm-hmm. Now, the thing that I find maddening, which I mentioned a little bit off the top of this movie, in terms of the production of this movie, is just the number of shots that they had to get. And I can only imagine the headache of apps of getting everything that they had to get in terms of, like, the insert shots and, like, Michelle Yeoh in 40 different dimensions wearing different costumes and a hat and, like,
and
doing this and, like, the
she's
lights
in a hot dog costume and she's...
Yeah, so... The amount of fill-in and insert shots that they would need, and just keeping track of that and getting that is wild to me. Because there are times where, like, 3 seconds of screen time has passed, and I'm like, you had maybe 60 shots. Like, you had 60 different shots because they're all one frame each, maybe, in almost 3 seconds. But that is 60 days of set dressing, costume, wardrobe for just a goof. And some of it is quick hit green screen stuff. But some of it is like, we're fully in the kitchen set, and then that needs to explode, and we need to do that, and now it's a totally different thing, and now the lighting needs to spin in a circle because this is going to be the shot where she is seeing her from every dimension. So it just becomes so much that they must have recorded for this.
This movie blows my mind for how it is very complicated, but also very basic. Like, for everything you just said, most of that stuff was practical, though. Like, they film her in 18 different locations. Like, this isn't like we made CG Michelle Yeohs and they kind of morph into each other. It is definitely just Michelle Yeoh on 18 different days and 18 different costumes with a light on her face.
Yeah.
Floating through time. I will tell you, this movie had 600 digital effect shots done by a 7-person VFX team, who were friends of the directors who usually do music videos.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I can see the music video style of it now. You do need a large number of shots with highlighting effects with quick cuts between one another with a fast turnaround time.
Uh-huh. So they did it all pretty much practical. Wow. The VFX was 7 people. So music video directors helping with them do all this stuff. But like, yeah, amazing, like, the way you would have to line up everything, too, because she goes from dimension to dimension, and it's always her in frame, but her on different days and different outfits.
Yeah.
So you have to get the exact same positioning every time. It must be a nightmare to coordinate. And we're not talking about just one sequence. This happens, like, 18 times.
The production coordinator alone, like, to for our listeners who might not know, like, a lot about making a film, sometimes production coordination, and it's always a very difficult job. I don't mean this to trivialize it, but like a simplification of how movies look and how it's done is, let's say there you see a James Bond movie, and in the beginning of the movie he drives a boat, and at the end of the movie there's a boat chase in that same boat, but the boat doesn't show up in the middle of the movie. So a production coordinator, and like, they're scheduling things out, and they're like, okay, that beginning sequence and end sequence, we filmed them back to back, obviously, because we've got this boat and this waterway locked down for a set period of time, so we've got to line that up. So that's the type of thing that, like, non-sequentially you have to line up. But when you're making a movie like this, it's like, okay, Michelle Yeoh, we're going to get this big emotional scene between you and your daughter. You've got all these taxes in front of you. Your husband has divorce papers. You don't know their divorce papers. You know that you're getting audited. Your father is upstairs. He just came in. He doesn't know you're being audited. You're lying to him and you don't want to tell him. And now we're going to film this big emotional scene. Okay, now someone put a chef's hat on her. We need to do that again. Look at the camera. We got the robot-controlled camera. We need one of you screaming. Okay, now we need one of you smiling. Okay, now we're going to need this. And when I look at the script later, you're going to have hot dog fingers. Someone come in and put the hot dog fingers on her. Okay, now we've got Michelle with the hot dog fingers. We're doing so the amount of, like,
seriously, Michelle. All serious.
All
and it's
dead
all
serious.
All dead serious, like.
But these quick, like, we've got a set, we've got a location, we've got these actors, and now we need all of these insert shots for later scenes that make no fucking sense, and we can't miss anything, and we've got to get it all lined up. I don't know. I got nothing but humble feelings about the fact that they pulled this off. It is so impressive.
It is, as we said, it's a labor of love, because it's wild, because you can feel, when you look at it and think about it, you can feel the low budgetness of it. Like, even though there's multiple, like, so many universes, most of this movie takes place at the IRS building.
Right.
About 80% of this movie is just different rooms or walkways in the IRS building. It's not actually like a super expansive place to be. It's an office building. But then we branch out and there is all those other places. But at the end of the day, it's like most of this movie is two rocks on a cliff, which is pretty cheap, and then the IRS stuff. And
I love the rocks on a cliff thing, by the way.
It's touching as hell. Oh, yes. My God. It's just two rocks, and it gets you right in its bones. And I actually kind of just thought about this movie. Really, it kind of feels like what you said earlier about generational storytelling. And this feels like our generation of filmmaking, because the Daniels even said, the directors who are both named Daniel, have even talked about, they learned, like, they hired two YouTube guys to do the fight choreography in this.
Okay.
They hired Andy and Brian Lee. So they're like, we got these guys from YouTube. We didn't get, like, movie fight coordinators. I'm just going to find the tweet where Daniel Kwan says, we learned VFX from video design. We learned shot design from every frame of painting, the YouTube channel. And then the Martial Arts Club are the guys who did the fight choreography. So this is kind of like new generation movie making. They didn't...
Right.
They didn't just put their heads down and work. I mean, they did put their heads down and work, but they burnt the structures to the ground. Hmm. They did it their way. Like, our friends who do music videos are doing 600 VFX shots. The guys from YouTube are doing the fight choreography. Some of the best fight choreography I've ever seen in a film. I love it. It's in a style I absolutely adore. They learned every frame of painting, taught them film design. I'm like, oh my God, it's a great YouTube channel. But to learn from that is crazy. So I like... Yeah, they're the idea of the movie. Like, they are encapsulating kind of the daughter's story, I feel.
Interesting.
And I think that's really fun. I've just been captivated by the whole telling of how they made this movie and, like, reading their tweets lately about, like, how everything worked.
This is so fascinating. Wow. It's just really impressive work that they have done here.
Really impressive. It gives me little vibes of frequently asked questions about time travel. Remember that Chris O'Dowd movie?
Oh, yeah. I haven't thought about that movie in a while.
Just like a big premise told on a small budget.
Yes.
Even like, because sci-fi is very hard to do with no budget. Like, especially if you're doing big, expansive, multi-universe or time travel sci-fi.
Right, right.
And this feels like not very similar, but just like we had a big idea and we have to tell it with no money.
Yeah. And no money, but also to make it so visually appealing as well. Like, you know, there are sci-fi that does that kind of breaks ground. They're your primers of the world.
Ooh,
where
primer.
It's just like, but you know, in that scenario, it's like we're a bunch of film students with a VHS camcorder and like we're making it look as good as possible, but we don't have 700 VFX shots and we don't have the newest like lighting rigs to make everything look as crisp and beautiful as we necessarily want to make it look, or even may or may not even know how to make it look yet. Yeah. Yeah, really really fascinating movie.
I will say, I think one of my final things I touched briefly, the fight choreography is so cool. The riot shield fight is my favorite. She's like got the riot shield,
yes.
And she like puts it on her back and pushes everyone off with it, and she's hitting people in the face with it.
She's channeling a sign spinner version of herself from a different universe, yeah.
People, you don't know what skills are going to be useful in different points in your life. The sign spinner was very funny. I forgot she was getting the sign spinner. But yeah, just incredible choreography of like, we have to choreograph a fight scene based on one skill.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't have all the skills in the scene. She has the skills of a sign spinner. What can we do? And it's brilliant and it's wonderful. Every fight scene is like that.
It's so nice. It's I agree with you. That is, I forgot that scene existed. It was a nice play. It was a nice play off of like a modification to be like, what can we do with that skill? You're right. I did want to mention the big villain device, the MacGuffin, if you will, of Joe Buttubaki was the everything bagel, which is funny and cute, but also I'm like, I just saw them do that on Dimension 20 for like not too long ago, you know?
If I find out you're fans of Dimension 20, it's also like, you know, it's kind of a joke you can make. I didn't get the impression this was set in New York. It feels like a very New York joke in everything bagel.
Yeah, I don't know where this was intended to have been set, but either way, yeah, it's, I was like, I'm seeing this again.
Yeah, it felt like a joke that I would have been like, so clever if I hadn't seen like an entire season of a D&D campaign around that idea, like a pretty famous one.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I was also like, everything bagel again, huh? And you can't Google like, has anyone done everything bagel as a joke? Because you'll just get places to buy an everything bagel if you Google that. And also D20 is behind a paywall.
Yeah.
So it's easy to not see. But yeah, I agree. That also crossed my mind.
Yeah, the everything bagel joke didn't do anything for me. And I wonder if it did things for people who don't watch Dimension 20.
Yeah, well, you're chiming in about whether you'd eat chapstick or not, or whatever we asked about earlier.
Sincerely do tweet that at From Superheroes.
Yeah, we always want to know how you feel.
Yeah.
And yeah, let us know if the everything bagel joke landed for you if you haven't watched D20. And yeah, I think my final point for Everything Everywhere All at Once is we talked a lot about several themes that have happened already. Fight with kindness, enjoy the specs. There is a theme in here that I like that I think is not, I don't even know if they're pushing for it to be a theme, but it's one I took away that I really liked, which is failures are there is honor in failing, because she is the most important Evelyn in the universe because she has tried everything. She has tried being a singer. She has tried being an actress. She has tried being a chef. She has tried everything. And she's failed at all of them.
Huh.
But she is not a woman who's just sitting stagnantly waiting for things to happen to her. Like, she has tried everything. Like, these universes exist because she gave everything a shot. And she failed at them all. But there is, like, a reward even if you fail. There is a reason for it. There is consequences in a good way. And I like that a lot of, like, even if you fail, it's good that you tried. And it's not a huge moral, but it's one that I took away that I do like.
I think that's beautiful. I think that that is... I think that's definitely a you theme.
I think
that
is something. I don't think the movie was trying to say it.
I think that's something that you found in there, and you're beautiful for it, and it's a beautiful theme. I don't think the movie gave it to you, but I love that you found that little nug in there.
Aww,
that's very
thanks.
Nice. I think that that is a lovely theme.
Aw, yeah. I thought it was. I think maybe they might have tried to do it on purpose. I don't want to take credit for their theme.
Yeah, if they did try it, then you're giving kudos to that theme. And if it wasn't attempted, that's a Diana original, and that's nice too.
I'll be sending an invoice to the Daniels.
Please.
Found you a nice theme in your movie.
So money, please.
I'm sure they love being told themes from their... Actually, they'd probably like to hear it if I didn't ask for money. If I didn't ask for money...
If it weren't for the money
thing. I bet they would be like, oh, we're glad you took that from the film.
They might
genuinely
be on board if it weren't for the money thing.
If it weren't for the money part. If only I wasn't so greedy.
Well, let's go in for the close. Let's ask the final question of what would you change? So now that we've discussed everything we discussed, what would you change about this movie if you could change anything? Before we do ask that final question, we want to thank our final sponsor of today's episode. We want to thank our friends over at Quip.
Over at Quip, they're going to take care of your teeth. Good health starts with good habits, and Quip makes it easy. They will deliver everything you need for your mouth straight to your door on a monthly basis, and you're going to be like, oh, thank you from my teeth.
Thank you very much. From my teeth, they make a fantastic electric toothbrush that is loved by over 7 million mouths. It's got timed sonic vibrations with 30-second pulses to guide a dentist-recommended 2-minute clean. It's a lightweight and sleek design, so there's no wires or bulky chargers. Mine is just attached to the mirror because it has a multi-use travel cover that doubles as a mirror mount. So mine's just on the mirror, no clutter, it's not on the counter, it's all just like clean and smooth and nice.
It's a sleek looking toothbrush. It looks like if an iPhone was a toothbrush.
Yeah, a little bit. And they've got different, like, it's all like sleek metal and they've got different hues. And it looks really good. I mean, I've been on an oral hygiene tip. I recently got aligners. And so if any of you have had aligners before, you know. And if you don't, maybe you don't. I'm brushing my teeth more often. Like, I got to take these little plastic boys out anytime I want to have like a little snack. And then I got to clean my teeth up before I put these things on. So I'm spending more time on dental care than I normally would. And having a nice toothbrush that has gentle sonic vibrations and it's just very comfortable and sleek, and it's there, it's easy to use, and it's not too abrasive, but it gets everything done I need it to do. It's a very nice thing for my routine.
It is nice for your routine, and what's especially nice is that they deliver all the accoutrement as well, because you are using so much more these days. So they can get the anti-cavity toothpaste that helps prevent cavities. There's two ways to floss. There's a floss string that expands, or a reusable floss pick that replaces over 180 disposable picks with every refill. So there's a lot to love with your Quip complete package.
I like the floss string if I'm like really getting in there, but like the floss pick is nice for just a like one tooth's bothering you. You know when you're like, I had a little popcorn and there's like one tooth where you're like, there's something going on in there. Like the floss pick, I'm like, this is just going to help me out like with a quick
hit. Oh, I love the uniformity of the pick. I like that each tooth's getting the same attention.
That's nice too. Well, if you go to getquip.com/super right now, you'll get your first refill free. That's your first refill free at getquip.com/super. That is spelled getquip.com/super. Quip, the good habits company, and thank you, Quip, for your support.
Thank you so much, Quip.
And as well, before we get into the final question, we will remind you, as we do every week, and if you've already done this, feel free to skip ahead, is please rate, review, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast Addict, whatever app or podcatcher you might use. It only takes like a minute or two of your time. It helps us move up the rankings. It helps us find new audience. It sincerely is an important thing for podcasts to grow, to expand, to find new audience, to pay our bills, to get people on board. And it's a free way that you can help us out. And while you're there, do it for a couple podcasts that you love, because just get the ball rolling, you know?
Yeah, I wouldn't have known for sure that we were relevant, hip, and happening if a bunch of you haven't given us those incredible reviews lately that told us we were. So find some other podcasts as well and tell them they're whatever adjectives they are. They don't get my adjectives. We're relevant, hip, and happening. Oh, they still get a review.
Okay.
They don't get our adjectives.
I was going to lend them our adjectives.
No, that's us.
Okay, that's just for us.
I trademarked it not too long ago.
So review if
you're... You can use it in our review.
For our review, we're relevant, hip, and happening. For your other favorite podcasts, just leave them a nice review with some other combination of words.
They're whatever they are.
Takes a few minutes. It's free. Sincerely, means a lot to the podcasters that you listen to. And as well, if you want to support us monetarily and get cool bonuses for it, you can check us out over on Patreon. Every month on Patreon, we drop a exclusive episode of the podcast that's just for our patrons. This month was a special month because we've dropped two episodes.
Covering three movies.
Y'all wanted us. We got a bunch of tweets. We got some shout outs asking us to continue doing the Twilight movies, which are completely goddamn insane. Oh my God. So over on the Patreon, we did Eclipse. And then we did Breaking Dawn Part 1 and 2 as a combined episode. Those are two episodes, bonus episodes of the podcast, available only to our patrons at patreon.com/fromsuperheroes.
Big month for Patreon. We did every Twilight Everywhere all at once this month.
We did, didn't we?
We did do that. We saw all the Twilights in a month. So you're going to want to go on that journey with us. It was a journey. It was fun. So that's at the $10 level. If it's in the budget, if it's not, don't worry about it. There's other bonuses at the $1 level as well. You can do monthly, you can do yearly. But we got those Twilight episodes that people have been asking for. So if you've been waiting for them to drop, they've dropped.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's available over on our Patreon page right now.
And I didn't say the URL, did I?
No, I'm going to say it.
You're going to say it? Andrew's got this, you guys.
It is over. Go check it out. Have a look. It's at patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. That's patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. If it's in the budget, we appreciate you. If it's not, we understand that as well. But have a look. And even if you can't afford the extra Patreon exclusive episodes, throw in a buck if that's in the budget, because that also changes our lives in the podcast and means a lot. So patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. We appreciate y'all.
We appreciate you so much, patrons.
And now let's go in for the close. Let's ask the final question of what would you change? Diana, what would you change?
My change is just a kind of a clarification on what Joju was trying to accomplish, the evil daughter.
Jobu, I believe.
Jobu, I'm so sorry.
Oh, it's all right.
My IMDb closed.
Yeah, it's Joy. And I think Jobu, but the villain has a separate name, but the Multiversal Joy.
The Multiversal Joy. So she seemed to be just killing a lot of people, and then at the end she wanted to destroy either herself or everything. It was a little unclear, so that why I didn't enjoy. I need to know what's going on. What I thought her purpose was supposed to be when she was describing her problem, which is that she's fractured into every possible universe, is I thought she was destroying universes. So my change is that she was. So she's destroying every single universe one at a time so that she'll get down to one universe and she won't be fractured anymore. That's her kind of goal, is to destroy everything but one universe. And she's like, if there's one universe, I'll be happy. And so she's, because right now it seems like she's killing everyone but not destroying the universe. Mm-hmm. Like she's just kind of physically one-on-one fighting people. So she destroys, so her goal is destroy every universe but one. And then when I get to one universe, I'll be happy. But what I think, and what I think Michelle Yeoh will do is, we've seen that even when she finds what she wants to be happy, she's not happy. She goes to her movie star universe and she's not happy there. And I think she can really relate to Joy then and be like, you will never be happy. So you have to be happy with what you have. And then that kind of the still the same message, but just a little cleaner, because we know what Joy's trying to accomplish. Mm. And that final fight can be a little shorter, actually. After the big emotional crux with the husband, I felt the fight with Kindness was a little long. So those are my two, a little change and then like a bigger clarification change of what Joy's trying to accomplish.
I'm 100% on board for all of that. That is wonderful and lovely, and it really adds so much. If there is only one, then it adds meaning. So that's in.
Excellent.
That's in for me.
Thank you so much. What would you change?
What I would change is I kind of want the middle act to be from Joy's perspective.
Oh.
So I kind of want this because the movie's broken into three parts, even with title cards. It's everything, it's everywhere, it's all at once. I kind of want the everything to be Evelyn's kind of chaotic mess as mm-hmm. she's being introduced to the multiverse. To understand Joy's purpose and rage and maybe kind of like adolescent malaise and anger towards the world, I almost would prefer if it were just like everything is Evelyn's story, everywhere is Joy's of being everywhere all at once and not understanding the purpose of life and kind of being angry at that. If we got her perspective as to why she feels like this universe is meaningless, and then in the third act, we bring both of their stories together to kind of understand one another a little bit more, I almost feel like this relationship would work a lot more for me. To be like, we have the chaotic mother's relationship as she is then at the IRS, abandoned by her child who was supposed to come help her that day, learning that all of these things have happened, while then in the next act we cut to her daughter who knows all of these things have happened because she is everywhere. And then getting her perspective. So I would like Joy's perspective. And to combine that with yours, I would say in Joy's perspective, she is trying to destroy these other universes.
We
except
go with her
one
from universe to universe.
Because she is desperately trying to find meaning. Mm. Whereas Evelyn does not care about meaning in her story. Like, it's just, you go for the sake of going. And with hers, it's like, but why am I going? And she needs to find that reason. And then they both need to understand one another in the final conclusion.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, because it's like there's a horror element to viewing her through the people she's killing in those first few scenes. But if we're trying to relate to this villain, which the movie really wants us to because she is the daughter of the main character, then yeah, we should be following her through her choices and why she's making them. Yeah, I can see that.
Nice.
Love it.
Love it?
Yeah.
Love it.
Big change.
Big change. We did it.
We did it.
We've done it again. It almost feels like we do it every week.
It's almost like it's part of our job.
Yes.
Every week to make a little change.
And we have no criticisms for ourselves every single week. We do it successfully, it would seem.
Well, look at us. Haven't we done well?
Perhaps we'll do it again next week. Next week, we are going to be back on the podcast. Next week, we are going to be talking about the Halo TV show.
Oh, Halo's here.
Halo's here. Look out. We'll be talking about that next week. And once again, if you want to hear more of us, you can check out patreon.com/fromsuperheroes, where we release the extra bonus episodes every month. And this month, we released bonus episodes on the Twilight movies because y'all wanted it so much. And if you want to get a hold of us, you can reach me online at Ivamey, Ivimey.
You can reach me at Words of Diana.
And you can reach both of us at From Superheroes. And let us know if you'd prefer to eat a lip balm or chew on some old gum you found under a table.
Big questions asking.
Big questions.
It's a big multiversal movie, and that's the question we have.
That's the big one. We'll talk to y'all next week.
Bye.